Mr. Whitaker, Reel 20, you were describing the position that the South Knots took up on the 5th of June, just by the cauldron. If you want to go on.
Yes. As I say, we're on this reverse slope, a ridge a few hundred yards, maybe every two or three quarters of a mile in front of us. And there we were dug in. What we thought then was a lousy position. Only real noticeable thing I can remember the rest of that there, apart from going, as I say, watching our troops fire on the German positions, an occasional plume of smoke trying to hit something. We were on the move towards the ridge, looking in the eye, we looked straight in the eye of the pilot Oliver, 109. I could see there was this big black and white spin, it literally came over the hill. And fortunately, as he fired, it was firing past us. But it was the most disconcerting moment when you're going up the hill and the aeroplane appears. Otherwise, we simply sat the day out, and the colonel came to see Major Burke in a time or two and expressed his anxiety. He wasn't very happy about the position then. The main thing they were moaning that they hadn't got a fire plan so that we could have heavily shelled these Germans before the tanks got there. We'd had to drop in position and, get the range and everything while they knew exactly where this ridge was and shot us up. So we settled down for the night. The tanks, during the night, the tanks came through and they said, they told us not to be alarmed, the tanks were going out to refill and rearm. So, the 6th of June, stood to for before first light, and as it got light, looked up the ridge, yes, there were the tanks in position. You just see them silhouetted, the tops of them. And as it got just a bit lighter, then the real tragedy, we knew we were for it, quite honestly. There were German tanks, and they were hauled down. They were just the other side of the ridge with the tops. And as soon as it got light enough, of course, they started firing. And not only tank fire, but a thing I've not experienced before, but the German artillery, of course they've got their OPs there, haven't they, about it, as I say, literally a few hundred yards from us, and they fired air bursts. This is distinct from the old type shrapnel, which fired little sort of ball bearings. This thing, the shell exploded just above your head, and the split trench was, as it proved, tragically, it was useless. You'd get something around quite close to you in the desert, and it would blow up, and your head was down, and you were pretty safe. But this stuff, as I say, they began firing this stuff at us, and see, no time at all. The guns fired a bit at the least, but there was no target. And of course, we couldn't get up the hill to see where to fire. We were helpless. In no time at all, where we were sitting, round to our left, there were German tanks, and I saw them capture a whole battery, certainly, of guns, which we knew were brand new and had only just come up the day before. And these fellows never fired a shot. They were only when we were, as I say. And all of a sudden, during the morning, as I say, after you get these sporadic bursts of this HE tank firing, and they seem to have they'd pick a truck out and just fire concentrated fire, sometimes machine guns. These horrible spandau, brand. And the the truck had blazed gone. In other words, somebody said, choose that one, and that was sorted it out. And all of a sudden, there was this horrible moment when Stukas came round, the whole swarm of them. And they didn't bother with us, but all round us, and absolutely all round purple smoke. And that really didn't bring it home.
That was the German tank signal you mentioned.
Whoever it was, they had this purple smoke, and they always used purple. We had no recognition. To illustrate that, I probably should have put this in the day before. Whilst we were against Norwich Ridge, the first squadron had seen a Boston bombers. The American planes, like the RAF, came over. We could see the Germans quite clearly. The Bostons flew over us, and they circled. And later we got a message, they hadn't dropped the bomb because they could not distinguish which was the who were German and who were us. We had no means of recognition. But these fellows, the simple purple smoke went up, said that it wasn't us, they went, you know, I think they thought, oh, there are no need to bomb them. They went over it. But there was this horrible moment, and all round us with this, which hung there, seemed to hang there for the rest of the day.
Now, what were you and Birkin doing?
Birkin, after the first few hours, about the last thing that I ever did in my capacity as battery commander's assistant, I got a message which said, from Colonel Seeley, he said, they've told us to hang on for 12 hours and we'll be rescued. He came up later and had a long chat with Major Birkin and told him that he'd asked to withdraw. Somebody saw what was happening in the morning and been refused permission. And then said, hold on. He asked where the tanks were, and they said, oh, they thought it more important. They'd gone down to Bir Hakeim to reinforce the Free French. There were, the Major and the Colonel were a bit, they didn't exactly like the idea that they'd left the South Knots and not only us, but a whole brigade with no protection whatever, and gone down without telling us. And after that, as I say, after this long chat, Major Birkin said, well, he said, you better make yourself useful where you can. And if you've ever not used a formal observation expert is, when the enemy's on your position, it's like the proverbial spare at the wedding. I've never felt quite so helpless. I walked up to the troops and had a yard. Nobody wanted to be there. They'd got the ammunition and you were just in the way. I had a word with the mates, you know, and passed the time of day, told them what the colonel had said. Well, we've only got to hang on 12 hours. And the reply to all that was a fat lot of any use that's going to be. Can't remember eating or drinking all day. As I say, I went from one place to another. The colonel, Major Birkin took me out of the car. For some reason, Tommy Hugel drove it. He was now the 800 weight driver. I did see him at one time during the day when Jim Hardy, the battery sergeant major, was with him. I went round sometime during the afternoon. I thought, well, the people who were wounded, I'd better have a look and see if I can help them. This was horrifying, because there were people, one of the first people I saw was Birkin's Batman in a slip trench with a big hole in the top of his steel helmet. And I think it was about this time when I began to realise that all this warfare was not, previously I must admit it had been very exciting and not enjoying it, but these were the friends, you know, people I knew. At another time, I got back to where our armoured car had been dug in, and there were half a dozen drivers had taken refuge in this big hole that we dug. And and they began to shell us right over us, this air burst. And I dropped into a slip trench, and I was sat there ages, petrified. And all of a sudden, there was one burst really close. And a lot of some terrible noises from this hole. I jumped up, and the poor chaps, they were all there. There were one or two still alive, but obviously only them. And for miraculously, looking in where I was, just literally a couple of yards away, this was a big wide, you know, to take a truck, and they got terrible. During the, as the day wore on,
so they were firing into the battery position at this point. They weren't attempting to overrun it, they were just firing.
There was a tank attack during the morning when I went up. I think that was Etrun, but they were Italian tanks, the little ones, and they beat them off. They really caused mayhem amongst them. They'd advanced down the hill. They were just over the top then. They hadn't bothered to stay all down. And we, you know, our lads fired at them. At one time when I went to, as I say, I was wandering around, a German staff car came right across the position. Four officers all steel helmets, and they were waving away while the battle was still going on. The other next thing I remember happened fairly not far away from us, the colonel's tank. He got a honey tank and his tank got hit. And we saw the driver, he got out, if I remember, and they were trying to get, but it went up in flames. I think we got one man out. But we went across, he come away, we didn't go, as I say, wasn't going to really make a mistake of going too close again, although it was quite close. And we said, who was in it? He said, the colonel. Captain Slim, he got killed early on, another great favourite.
Did you see him?
Didn't see him again, never saw him, didn't know where he don't quite know how it happened, so I know someone told me. Then during the afternoon, as I say, we'd lost most of the transport with them, and it was all, but then you could see wherever you looked, German tanks were actually on the position. And quite, you know, some of them at the back of us, in front of us, where battery was pointed, there wasn't much action at that. They were sitting just over the hill, shooting us up. Then Major Daniel, second in command, he came, heard him shouting, "Oh, there's some gunners, I've got a 25-pounder here, somebody man it." And with the last, I thought, well, I can't, you know, after all, can't sit here. I was in a slip trench at the time. Was
that what you were mostly doing, being in a slip trench?
From one trench to another, as I say, I'm going and seeing, you know, and I went looking around mainly to see if I could help, if anybody wanted any help.
And they hadn't.
Field dressings, there wasn't much you could do. If some of them were wounded.
Did you see Tim's?
Yes. After this was just after this.
Oh, carry on then. Carry on with the thing.
Major Daniels came with this, and he got a 25-pounder attached to a trucking and a limber. So I jumped up and said, "Here, sir." And there were two other fellas got out, and he said something like, "You know, might as well fire to the, you know, there's a few rounds in there, you might as well fire them or something," and off he drove. So I said to there were two chaps, I said, either of you a gun layer? And one says, "Well, I know how to, but I've never done it." And I said, well, we looked out, I said, well, there was this German tank 300 yards away. So I guessed the range, looked in, there were three rounds in the limber, no solid shot, you know, no arm piercing. So we loaded this this HE thing, and I said, try him. There was this big, it was a Mark IV. The Mark IV tanks had long guns on. I forget what, but anyway, we fired this shot, which you could, I know we didn't use a full charge because it was close, and you could see this thing, it went over the top of this tank, and it turned, the turret turned, and there was one, boom! And to my horror, I was the only one standing, there were three of us 1 minute, and the shots had come straight through the gun shield. And one, the chap who loaded the gun, he was at one side, he got hit somewhere just down in his chest. He ran towards the, I think he knew where the medic, anyway, but he did drop. The other poor fella, he'd got shot through the, it had come through the gun shield and through the legs. And I sort of took one look. The way it had gone in was fairly neat, but it had gone through both his, somehow it had gone through, it must have turned, oh, terrible. So I thought,
what have you done on the gun? I mean, one and limber.
I fired it. I pulled the handle. I ran the shell up and fired it. And I thought, no, looking at these big holes through this gun shield and 2 more HR, I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I wasn't going to be a hero for that. Anyway, I was more concerned with this chap. Couldn't tell you who it was. And I knew I'd seen, remembered that I'd seen the doctor and some wounded man sitting against a truck not far from there, which was my operation. And I ran back, and there was the doctor who was wounded. There was Lieutenant Timms, who'd got a bandage around his head and looked in a shocking state. Poor chap. And two or three others, all bandaged.
Now, was Timms, you've got a note saying that he was telling the MO to do somebody else first. Did you actually hear him say that?
Yes.
What did he actually say that you heard?
He'd already been bandaged, and the MO was sitting. I think he was wounded because they were all sitting down, and he simply said something to the effect of, there was somebody else who'd come up, whether it was this other chap who'd been on our gun, but I know he said quite distinctly, something like, oh, I'm okay, don't look after him first, because I think the doctor knew it, he must have been dying then, but he distinctly said, look after him. I said to the doctor, you know, I've got this chap badly wounded, I've got no field dressing, what can you do? And he said, he opened his bag, that's all I've got. And he said, give him these. And he gave me a couple of, I suppose, morphine tablets. And he says, bind it. He said, what is it? And I told him, he said, I've only got one. He said, put the pad on the worst part. He said, and bind the whole thing together tightly. Which I went back and did.
Was he still alive?
Oh yeah, he was alive, all right. As I said, don't know who he was. Saw that he was all right, you know, and got him actually. There was a shallow hole nearby, and put him in that. And said, well, that's
it wouldn't stop the bleeding, though, would it? If it was through two thighs.
It was an awful mess. But say these things. You know, I put it where I did tell him to, I didn't really look at it. I planked it on and got his legs together as I'd been told and bound it up and gave him his tablets and went to look for something.
Was the tank still fired? You know, the tank that had fired?
No, it fired one burst and left us.
Did it fire machine guns as well?
It was a machine gun that he fired.
He didn't fire?
Wouldn't fire the big gun, tank gun. But
and the machine gun bullets gone straight through the shield.
Straight through the gun shield as if it didn't exist. There were clean holes with just a little burr at the back. It was quite close.
He didn't fire any artillery at all.
Just fired the machine gun at us and wiped us out. However, as I say, because some of the holes are on my side of the shingle. This chap had sat in the layer seat, you know, on the left. And there were one or two holes, and I began to feel lucky at that point, and thinking it was, you know, I really think at that time, I began to think it's time this finish could have.
What was happening at that stage? I mean, you'd say the tanks were all over the position, weren't they?
They were simply wiping, mainly they were wiping out transport. They still seemed to, the main target seemed to be to go near a truck, boom, and wipe it out.
Were they actually rolling over the position?
At that time, they were to the, what I call the back of us. We were still facing up this hill, 425, and most of them were, they'd gone round us. The tanks in front of us at that time just sat there. They only came down the hill slightly.
So they were the sort of the tanks behind were rolling up your
they
transport.
Were rolling up.
So that nobody had actually come through your gun line yet.
Not yet. And then, as I say, there were ammunition exploding. You know, the gun limb was gone up. Ammunition trucks blew up. Flame, smoke, horrible stink of, you know, gunpowder, and then was pushing on evening for that, must have been pushing on evening for that time. Major Daniels came up, and I decided, well, I'd go up to, I think it was E-Troop, where I got one or two of my fire. I thought, well, we're obviously going to get caught, I might as well be with me pals. Looked round, I'd got no kit, you know, shorts, shirt, tin helmet. I still got my side hat tucked in my epaulette. And I thought, well, I may as well, if this is it, which it obviously was, I've got, and might as well be with my mates, because I hadn't seen Major Birkin and the car for some time. Major Daniels drove up and shouted, form British Square. He said, go and form up on 426, who were, as I say, were over to our right. And I rushed up when I heard him this, and the gunners, they'd still got, fortunately for them, heaven knows where, the quads were still in action. And they went and hooked the guns, they went and hooked the guns in. And I went to get on the a limber of the first gun in the troop. And there were two or three chaps sitting on the limber instead of getting in there. And the nearest one, a chap called Harrison, Derby County Football, they were on the books of Derby County. I don't remember them, just for that reason. The others I didn't know. We went a few yards and there was a most horrible whoomp. I should have said that, not being able to get in there, I rushed, the truck was moving, I rushed, I grabbed hold of the door and put one foot in the footrest. So I was hanging on the side of the door with one foot on and holding on through the, you know, the window was down, hanging on. And there was a horrible whoomp, and I glanced around, couldn't quite see what happened. There were some awful moans at the back. Boom! That awful crash brought us to a standstill. And as I jumped off, I looked back, and the first shell had hit these boats in the middle. And this poor Harrison, terrible sight. I mean, he was practically in half, and the others. It had just hit them. And I can still feel a big, just if a big wave had come over with, so I wasn't on that, that they'd told me to get off this limber. You know, half off, they said. Always, oh dear. And I dropped off, as the truck came to us, I dropped off the door and threw myself flat. The driver, another quite a popular chap, Steve, I would call him, Stevenson, It got halfway out the door, and the next armour piercing came straight through the driving camber. And there was poor Stevenson left hanging over the door. And I did about 3 more yards and found a slip trench and dropped in it. And that was the end, as far as I was concerned.
No.
It was the daftest, I still regard that. That was all the other women couldn't tell you what had happened. When I looked, all the others had been stopped. These tanks, they were only 100 yards away, and they were moving.
Did you think this order to form a British square? I mean, that wasn't a manoeuvre that you'd know anyway, was it?
No. What it meant was get back to back and fight it out, you see. You have one battery there and one there and fight it out.
Do you think that, in any way, that was a reasonable order?
No, I didn't. Especially, what? It was murder. Because the tank, as I say, when I looked, when I eventually did put my head up, a few, you know, it took me a few minutes really to gather myself together. As I say, 3 shots, you know, say bang, bang, and all the others were stopped. They all got shot up.
The whole of Etru.
The whole of Etru.
And that hadn't been damaged much.
And we know it got away quite lightly. There'd been people. There must have been people.
Was Daniel with you when this happened?
He'd gone.
So
where he went.
He'd given the order, but where? When had he gone? How had he gone?
I haven't a clue, because when I heard this order, and it was in his little 800 way.
Did he shout it?
He shouted, yeah. Yes, he drove up as I was coming up to the troop, and he shouted to them. And I don't even know if the gun position officer was still there, but I know they hooked in and went, and they got shot to pieces.
What was his demeanour when he shouted it? I mean, was it a quiet order, or was it was there an element of panic in it?
No, really. Well, I wouldn't say it was panic. It was just, you know, it was this last man, last round.
Normally, when officers give those orders, they stay with the people they've ordered. I mean,
yes, I don't know whether he was dashing off to 426 to tell them what he was doing. It certainly wasn't running away, you know.
That's what I wanted, because some people, from what you said, it might have sounded like he was running, but you don't feel he was running away, he was just...
I feel he was doing the... I rather felt he was overdoing the heroic bit myself. I'd say it was such a... Things were in such a state of panic that...
But he wasn't panicking,
He wasn't really panicking, no.
Were there any signs of panic amongst the men, or do you mean by panic chaos?
Just chaos. No,
the men weren't panicking.
Nobody. One or two, I did find out afterwards that one or two had, there was one gun sergeant who quit, who was I've mentioned him before, the Liverpudlian, who was such a brave lad at fighting Protestants, and he left his gun, claimed he was wounded or something, which he wasn't, he left his gun. But I didn't hear any other. Everybody just sat there. And
that was an isolated incident.
Isolated incident. Mostly, it was a.
Would you have expected? Would you have thought it better of Major Daniel if he surrendered? If they'd surrendered E Troop then?
I thought about it in the days, just the days following, and I thought. What we should have done is destroyed the guns. What was the old fashioned spike?
So you felt it was a totally unrealistic order?
I felt it was absolutely, particularly as I say, in view of my own experience, where I saw 4 people who I knew quite well.
Did anyone else comment on the order, or was there no time?
There was no time. No time at all.